Dr. Swabany, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
What's an obesogen?
An obesogen is a foreign chemical or a chemical that isn't naturally occurring in the body that leads to weight gain.
Okay, that's pretty vague. Does that mean it's lots and lots of different things fall under this category?
Yes, okay. It does. So generally it is, we can think of them as toxins, so things that the body wouldn't naturally produce or isn't naturally accustomed to trying to process.
Okay.
And ultimately what we're finding more and more is that those toxins that we've always known don't do great things for the body also have a major impact on weight gain. You know, we tend to think of weight as having to do with the calories we take in and the calories we burn.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And that is not.
I ate a bunch of ice cream. I should run more.
Yes. And that's not the whole story. I know. And, you know, not that that is simple, but that it's not that straightforward. It's not that simple.
Okay.
There are a lot of hormones involved in weight loss and weight gain, a lot of hormones involved in appetite regulation. And I've mentioned in a previous segment, but toxins really strongly impact our glands, which are the things that produce hormones in the body.
Okay. So an obesogen would be different from a toxin how?
It's basically a category of toxins.
Okay.
So my guess is as we move forward in the naturopathic profession, in the medical profession, and the more research comes out, we'll identify more and more toxins that we can correlate directly with weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's a list of toxins that we see in the research as affecting weight one way or another, right? So that's what they're calling obesogens, things that they've actually shown to have a correlation there.
Okay. Such as?
Such as cigarette smoke. We know all the effects of smoking on the body. One is that the toxins from smoking can affect weight gain. Now we know smoking is also an appetite suppressant.
Yeah.
So the nicotine itself is an appetite suppressant, but the toxins you accumulate over time contribute to weight gain.
Okay. Yeah, because people always say they gain weight when they quit smoking.
Yeah, and that has to do with the appetite piece and also the habitual piece of smoking, the, you know, the
putting
hand to mouth.
In your mouth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a nail biter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So cigarette smoke, what
cigarette
else?
Cigarette smoke. Additives in food. MSG, high fructose corn syrup, food dyes, these types of things. A lot of the household cleaners, plastics, you know, one that's been studied a fair amount is BPA.
Okay.
BPA,
yeah.
Which we
see that in plastics a lot.
Mm-hmm. So BPA, and now they're trying to take it out of plastics, which is wonderful. The problem there, though, is that's the one that's been studied. There's probably many more substances in plastics that are affecting our health that aren't being studied yet.
Okay.
So really, it goes back to avoiding toxins where we can, doing the best that we can with that. And when we know there's a toxic burden in our bodies, either from recent years or from decades past, we do what we can to help the body eliminate those toxins.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be jumping ahead a little bit here, but as a weight loss program, for example, you do want to watch what you're eating and you also want to exercise, but you may fall into a cycle, which many people do with weight loss, where we lose weight and we burn fat. But the fat cells, which are the cells in the body that really often carry most of the toxic load. So just a little background on that. The body puts a lot of the toxins into the fat cells. So when we accumulate them, puts it into the fat cells because it's a safe place for them. Safer than the bloodstream anyway.
Mm.
And so body sticks the toxins in the fat cells. We get around to trying to lose weight. We mobilize those toxins. And if our body doesn't have a good way for those toxins to come out, then they're reabsorbed back into the body where we need to then maintain our fat stores to keep them safe and housed away. The body's brilliant. It's protecting the nervous system. It's protecting our lives, really, with putting the toxins into the fat cells. Mm-hmm. But that prevents us from being able to lose weight.
Right. Wow. I'm having like a mind blown sort of moment here. Should we be afraid of fast weight loss?
Yeah, we should. Yeah, it's generally not safe, especially if it's not monitored. And again, if we are not keeping our attention on what might be happening with these toxins, I mean, that's a scenario where we're losing fat quickly, toxins are being mobilized quickly, and have a lot of space to affect other systems in the body, very sensitive systems, okay, like the nervous system, for example.
Yeah, because there are some ways to lose weight quickly. You can, you know, dramatically change your caloric intake, or you can dramatically increase your exercising. Or my personal favorite is when they say you want to lose 10 pounds in a week, cut off your arm.
Right.
Like, great idea. But, yeah, it seems like somebody can lose weight, and I'm thinking of a show like The Biggest Loser where they lose like 100 pounds in 6 weeks.
Mm.
And then occasionally you do see a news outlet follow up 6 months or 1 year down the road, and that weight is almost always back and usually worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about slow and maintenance weight loss.
Yes. There are many things I like about that type of weight loss and what I would recommend to my patients. One is that generally it sets you up for success because of the habit building factors. So it takes, you know, I think they say 21 days to build a habit. And so if we are trying to lose weight quickly and trying to drastically change everything about our lives in a short period of time, it's unlikely that's sustainable. Mm-hmm. So I work on sustainable dietary and lifestyle changes with my patients. And to be honest, we don't talk about weight loss as a specific thing a lot. We talk more about optimizing the body's function and creating a healthy lifestyle, because the number on the scale does not matter to me as much as a clinician, mm-hmm, as does all the other pieces of a person's life, all the other things I'm looking at to gauge whether or not they're healthy.
Yeah. Is it a given that someone needs to lose weight? Is it possible to look beyond that societally accepted norm of thin means fit and still be quite healthy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am a big advocate for there are a lot of healthy body shapes and sizes. And when I have a patient coming in saying, I need to lose weight, I say, well, let's look at that. Right. So let's look at it. Maybe it's true. And, we know obesity is an epidemic in our country. It is true that many people do need to lose weight, but that is not the only factor that affects their health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether or not they have a heart attack is partially related to their weight and partially related to all of these other factors, including their toxic burden. So all those things are important in looking at the health picture. So I don't want to discourage someone from losing weight if that's what really needs to happen. But often there's a lot more to it.
It's not necessarily the starting point.
True.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about the food issues that can come up with maintenance weight loss. You sent a little cheat sheet of things to discuss, and on this list for overcoming that cycle of weight gain, weight loss, weight gain, weight loss is transforming your relationship to stress. And it's interesting to me that you did not say get rid of stress.
Yeah, well, that would be impossible. Yes, so that is how I frame it. Transforming your relationship to stress.
Okay.
So
what
we
do you
know.
Mean?
What I mean by that is we're all exposed to stress, right? It is a part of life, and in some ways a healthy part of life, depending on how you look at it. So we need to, if there is a challenge, with the impact stress is having on our lives, it's important to transform our relationship to it. That means everything from creating healthy boundaries as to accumulate less stress to the things that show up in our lives that cause us stress, figuring out how we can work with them internally in a different way that doesn't cause us more distress.
Mm-hmm. So there's elements outside of a medical doctor's approach to this.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's I do something in my practice called heart math, which helps teach people to transform that relationship to stress. And so that's one example of a tool, but it's a way of getting some feedback on how your body responds in a stressful situation, and then building a toolkit for yourself that's very individual to you, mm-hmm. and how to respond differently.
Okay. Yeah, because people do respond to stressors differently. Some people might have 12 things to do, and somehow that makes them better able than if they have one thing to do. Mm-hmm. And then some people might look at 12 and feel totally overwhelmed.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about skin exposure and what that has to do with obesogens. How are we exposed to these without even, I mean, I guess you're going to say we are still putting them in the body, but my question wants to be, how are we getting exposed without putting these in the body?
Yes. So I think the biggest skin exposures would be the things we put on our body, mm-hmm. right? So cosmetics, lotions, makeup, sunscreens, deodorant. So that's a big one. I do test people's hair a lot for toxins. And one that I see on almost everyone is aluminum. And I think that is because of the aluminum in deodorant primarily. There's a lot of other places aluminum.
Soda pop cans, I would think.
Yep, soda pop and there are other ways we can become exposed. But that deodorant piece, and we mean antiperspirants, I should probably say. I think mostly that's what the ones that contain aluminum. But most conventional deodorants you see on the shelf are going to contain aluminum.
Okay.
Particularly concerning for women being with the proximity to breast tissue. Mm. So I always recommend people use non-aluminum deodorants. And then in terms of cosmetics as well, you know, our skin is highly absorbable. So what we put on our skin does get absorbed into our bloodstream. And so we can accumulate toxins. And the high risk there is that it's something usually that we put on daily, right? It's not every once in a while. It's every day, especially as
cumulative
women. We put, you know, makeup on that contains these toxins, and we're doing that every single day. And that's this low-grade exposure that really affects us long-term.
Mm-hmm. You also, in your cheat sheet, you talk about shopping the perimeter of the grocery store and how that can impact health incomes. Don't go in the middle of the grocery store.
If you can avoid it, don't go in the middle.
That's where delicious chips and candy are.
Right, where all the toxins live, just festering in the middle of the grocery store. Yeah, so I talk about that with my patients a lot, is shopping the perimeter, the produce aisle, mm-hmm. you know, the meat, dairy, if you can tolerate it well, and obviously mostly produce. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, I don't recommend necessarily avoiding grains, so the whole grains as well.
Mm-hmm. But basically anything that comes from a natural source.
You know, right.
Chips are created in a lab, but potatoes come from the ground.
Exactly.
Okay. What about eating in plastic containers? Why is this something that people are telling us to avoid right now?
So that is, I believe, primarily at this point because of the research on BPA. Mm-hmm. And so they've found that to be an endocrine disruptor, so disrupts the hormonal systems of the body, and that is an obesogen as well, like we're talking about today. So eating out of plastic will and storing your food in plastic, and particularly microwaving your food or heating your food in plastic, is going to expose you to these toxins. And, you know, like I said before, that toxin in particular, BPA, but also all of them that haven't yet been studied.
If you take out just heating in the equation, are you okay?
That's a good question. I think it's on, again, a spectrum, I think, of that overall body burden. And if it were me, no, I don't think you should use the plastic at all. I think mostly you should just use glass storage containers to eat out of and store your food in. But I think you have to pick your battles in life too, right? So if you're avoiding your toxins in every way you possibly can, but you want to have your lunch out of plastic here and there, I'll be okay with that.
It gets hard to bike to work with glass containers.
I hear you. I hear you. Yes.
What is the Dirty Dozen?
The Dirty Dozen is a list put out by the Environmental Working Group that is the top 12 most basically dirtiest produce for the year. So they research all the produce coming in, foreign produce and domestic produce, and research which of those foods have the highest toxic burden. And then they put them on a list called the Dirty Dozen. So you can have access to that list. EWG.org, I believe, is their website. Each year, and you can find out, if I'm going to choose to mostly eat organic, mm-hmm. which foods do I for sure want to get organic? You know, I think often grapes, okay. apples, strawberries
Anything
are on
where you're
there.
You're eating the skin.
Most things where you're eating the skin. But I look at the list because it's not always the same group of foods from year to year. So some of them are consistent year to year, but we want to make sure to avoid those. They also have a list called the Clean 15, which are the foods that have the lowest toxic burden. And if you're going to choose to eat non-organic, those might be the foods you want to choose.
Okay. You also have on your list for taking care of obesogens and trying to get these out of your life, replace your pillows regularly. What? I don't want to buy things. Why is that a thing?
Yes. I'm going to be honest. That list, I did not create that list. That list came from elsewhere.
Okay.
And I'm
we don't know
not sure
one.
What the major purpose for that is, because I don't even do that. I must be choosing my battles in the form of, you know,
food.
Organic food.
Okay. Well, yeah, because it says wash bedding often.
But one of, yeah, and yeah. when one of the things related to that I think of is, you know, all the flame retardants on clothing, as particularly like clothing for infants and children and bedding, you know, that is highly toxic stuff that is best washed out before you sleep on it or wear it.
Mm. Well, we don't want babies catching fire.
We don't want them catching fire. We also don't want them sleeping in toxic pajamas.
Dr. Swabany, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Ashley.